Welcome back to Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today is a special episode. It is the first weekly crossover that we will be doing every single Wednesday here across the entire Locked On Podcast Network. So be sure to follow along as we bring you great content across the NFL network. Every host is going to be doing this crossing over every week, giving you as much content as you can get from both sides of the ball. I am the host of Locked On Jaguars, Zach Goodall. Be sure to throw me a follow on Twitter at Zach_Goodall. You can find all of my Jaguars related work throughout this Locked On Jaguars podcast, as well as over on the Locked On Jaguars website.
And I am Ed Valentine of Locked On Giants, and you can find my work at Big Blue View, and you can find all of our podcasts, of course, at Locked On Giants. And Zach and I are going to be discussing this Sunday's matchup between the Jaguars and the Giants. Zach, we'll see how this goes. You and I don't think we've done this before, so we'll stagger around here in the dark a little bit and see if we can do a show.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. Just about as excited as I am for this week one matchup, because football is finally back. It feels so good to be able to say that. There's been a huge change in Jacksonville over the past year, whereas the team wasn't in the gutter anymore. It's now a actual, solid competitive team. But even when the whole scene has changed, the one thing that remains constant is the off season is the worst. That dead period of time is always the worst.
Well, the off season, you know, it just takes forever, and people obsess over the smallest of things, because they're dying for news, they're dying for football, and everything gets magnified. And, but thank God we're here. We actually have football, and we have a game on Sunday that should be a really, really interesting matchup, I think.
I definitely agree. We can, I'm sure, talk predictions and stuff later on in the show for how we think the game will come out. But one of the biggest storylines heading into this game isn't even as much Jaguars versus Giants. It is two players in particular, and that being Jalen Ramsey and Odell Beckham Jr., the freshly extended receiver in New York. He's making his big money now. He's notorious for being a personality on the field. He's obviously gotten into some beef with opposing cornerbacks, and that's, I think, what makes the game so fun, regardless of reputation for the player. And I think that Jaguars fans feel the same way about Jalen Ramsey. So, are you as excited as everyone else is for this upcoming matchup on Sunday?
Odell against, as Eli Manning would say, Odell against who? I'm sorry. I had to throw that out there. To be honest with you, I think Giants fans are just ecstatic, excited about actually seeing, Odell Beckham in action. We haven't seen him since week five of last season, when he fractured his ankle. He's looked really, really good throughout training camp. He's looked happy. He's looked healthy. He looks like the same player that he used to be, but we haven't seen it. We haven't seen Eli throw the ball to Odell, when it mattered yet. So regardless of the fact that it's against Jalen Ramsey, I think Giants fans are just going to be thrilled, to see 13 line up on the field, when it matters.
I definitely agree, and I can even say as an opposing fan here that I'm anxious to see him on the field, especially after this contract extension. You don't see a ton of teams dishing out that type of money right after a big injury. The Jaguars did the exact opposite this past year, where they had the opportunity to pay Allen Robinson, who had the potential and ability to be a big-time playmaker, maybe not on the level of Odell Beckham, but certainly in his own type of way, and they chose not to. So this is obviously a risk move following an injury, but I do think it's one that's going to pay off for the team itself.
I do think that the Giants tried to wait as long as they could. I mean, John Mara, the co-owner, said that they figured they would do this eventually, but they honestly weren't sure if they were going to do it this year or next year. But they really wanted to see, you know, how well Odell Beckham meshed with the new coaching staff, with Pat Shurmur, with the new GM, Dave Gettleman. And that relationship seems to be on really solid footing. I think they really wanted to assure themselves that he was healthy, that he was the same player. And as I said, we haven't seen him in a game, but we've seen him a lot in practice. We've seen him all through training camp. I saw him in joint practices against the Detroit Lions. And from everything that I've been able to see, he looks 100% healthy. He looks ready to go. And obviously, you know, Jalen Ramsey and that Jaguars defense is going to be a really, really good test for Beckham. It's going to be a really, really good test for the Giants. I just hope that let's just cross our fingers and hope that you know, Beckham Ramsey doesn't degenerate into, you know, Beckham Josh Norman.
I've thought the same thing, and I hope that it isn't Ramsey versus, like, last year AJ Green, where both players are gone before halftime. That's not what we want, for sure. We want something exciting, but we don't want that level of excitement.
I had actually forgotten about that. What happened in that scenario?
This is what Ramsey's notorious for, and he said it in his recent magazine interviews that he'll just talk until you can't take it anymore. Even if he's exaggerating the truth, he's just going to find a way to enter your head. AJ Green, he realized that on the day he was only able to bring in one catch for 6 yards, so after every single play, he would go up to Green and say, "One catch, 6 yards." Until the point where Green decided to come chokeslam him. that got both players kicked out of the game.
Well, you know, this was the thing with Odell Beckham. I mean, Josh Norman at the time was considered, you know, one of the two or three best cornerbacks in the league. And I'll be honest with you, I was at that particular game in the press box, and I'll be honest with you, Josh Norman had no prayer of covering Odell Beckham. None. One-on-one, he didn't have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
His only chance, I mean, the first or second play of the game, Odell Beckham blew right past him for what would have been an easy touchdown, except that Odell forgot to catch the ball. and, you know, Josh Norman's only chance was to get inside Odell Beckham's head, and which he obviously did quite successfully. You know, if that's going to be the case, we think we've seen a much different Odell Beckham this spring and this summer. The Giants have waited a long time to see him, you know, show some signs of maturity, to begin to grow up, to begin to get away from, you know, all the histrionics and the stuff with the kicking net and the peeing celebrations and all of that. And, you know, he seems like, you know, the light has kind of gone on, and he seems a little different this time around, a little bit more mature. But if he's going to be challenged in that way, where he's going to be challenged verbally and challenged physically, you know, and challenged, you know, not only by a good player lined up across from him, but by someone who's absolutely going to try to get into his head and under his skin, you know, that's a great test for him. And I, you know, we'll see how he handles it.
It'll certainly be quite the welcome back. Now, a little bit ago, you did mention the Giants, you know, their new administration. They're under former Panthers GM Dave Gettleman. They've got Pat Shurmur in-house as the head coach. Before we start looking on to, you know, this game's impact as a whole for both teams, kind of give me an idea as to how, you know, the culture's changed in New York after the Ben McAdoo days with these two guys in-house, both in terms of personnel, the guys they brought in, and just, you know, the outlook of the team.
Well, you know, you mentioned the key word, Zach, and that's culture. And the fact of the matter is the Giants were a mess last year. It was sort of like, you know, it was like dealing with a kindergarten class. It was just completely out of control. Everybody was accusing everybody else of, you know, of stealing their lunch money and God knows what else. But the way that when the Giants brought in Dave Gettleman, then they went out and they hired Pat Shurmur. And what Gettleman said about Shurmur when they hired him was that he impressed them in the interview because he was an adult. And that has shown that the attitude is much different with the Giants. Brought in a lot of veteran leadership, didn't have a lot of in the locker room previously. You know, they had veteran guys like Eli Manning and a couple of other players, but they didn't have, you know, a veteran guy in every position group, a guy who had been through a lot of things. And they brought in a lot of those kind of guys. They brought in Nate Solder. They brought in Michael Thomas from Miami. You know, they brought in Jonathan Stewart, you know, from Carolina. They brought in, you know, Alec Ogletree from the Rams, who maybe he's not a great player, but he does bring leadership. He does bring experience. He's a solid guy. They just brought in a lot of these core guys, you know, who helped the culture, who helped guys understand what it is to be an NFL player, how you should conduct yourself. And it's just, you know, I look at it like, you know, it feels like a professionally run football team again. And last year, you know, it felt like, you know, it did. It felt like going to kindergarten every day.
Definitely. And that's something that Jacksonville has really understood since, you know, former Giants great Tom Coughlin came in, as well as Doug Marrone.
We did do you that favor, didn't we?
Yeah. Thank you. I can't thank you enough. The culture under Gus Bradley was, you know, sometimes it's okay to lose. That's genuinely what was thought of. That's what Ramsey has said in his interviews, that he didn't enjoy his first year because this team was so adapted to losing that it became like natural and they were okay with that. And the culture, like you said, the key word being is culture, it just completely changed. And I think with that type of disciplinary, not necessarily action in terms of consequences, but the fact that there's a responsibility in playing in this league, not only in terms of being a good football player, but, you know, accepting your responsibilities, all this kind of good stuff. I think once that's instilled upon these guys, you do see that change and the winning can come from there.
Oh, I think you're right, because you can't win, you know, you can't win when you don't put in the proper work. You can't win, you know, when you're not, when you're about yourself and you're not about the team. And when guys are at each other's throats and they're, you know, they're picking on each other and, you know, arguing with each other all the time, because, you know, push comes to shove in the fourth quarter, you know, of a tight game, you have to be able to depend on the guy next to you. And, you know, the Giants were just in a situation last year where it started with, you know, with us versus them, with Ben McAdoo versus the players, because, you know, McAdoo, you know, quite simply was in over his head as an NFL head coach. You know, the worst thing the Giants ever did was let Tom Coughlin go and put Ben McAdoo in charge of running that team, because, you know, Ben, you know, quite simply just wasn't up to that task. He wasn't ready for it. He didn't know how to relate to players. And it started with an us versus them kind of mentality, because, you know, Ben never did anything wrong and the players always messed up, you know, so, you know, Ben was never taking responsibility. So that just filtered down through the entire roster and created a mess. And we know it's just not going to work that way. And, you know, I have no idea how this season's going to work out with, you know, for the Giants, but I keep saying that they're just, they're in a much better place. They feel like they're pointed in a much better direction.
And I'm real anxious to see how that kicks off. And we will get to take a little bit more of a look as to how they should look on the field. When we come back from this break, we will start breaking down each team's, you know, what they got to do going into week one to beat the opposite team. We'll kick off with the Giants when we come right back.
You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice. Usually, it's what team to bet on this week. The truth is, I don't know who's going to win. But if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. And that's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, guys, they're your best bet this season. They've been in the business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. Lay down some cash and win big today. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game, live betting, and the most rewarding player perks in the business. For you and for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON when creating your account to claim the bonus. You play, you win, you get paid.
So, this Giants offense has seen quite a bit of makeover over the past 2 years. The early selection this year, obviously, of rookie running back Saquon Barkley, as well as later on Will Hernandez, who was personally a guy I very much wanted here in Jacksonville to run this power type of offense that they want to run. A lot of work done to the offensive line, bringing in Nate Solder as well as Hernandez, a former Jaguar himself in right guard Patrick Omame. Last year, bringing in Evan Ingram to match with Sterling Shepard, Odell Beckham, and give Manning some weapons. There's been a lot of makeover. How do you feel that they've meshed so far going into this first year under Shurmur, and what are you expecting to see from them in comparison to years past?
Well, I will say this much. They have not scored 30 points in a game. They didn't score 30 points in a game during the entire 2 years of Ben McAdoo's, you know, reign of terror as head coach. That will come to an end this year. I don't know that it'll come to an end on Sunday. They're facing a really, really good defense, but that will come to an end this year, provided that Odell Beckham is healthy, that Eli Manning is healthy, that Saquon Barkley is healthy. There are just too many weapons. Evan Ingram, you know, at tight end, Sterling Shepard as the other wide receiver. There are just too many weapons, too many options, you know, for the Giants not to have days and games where everything clicks and where this offense, you know, just rolls and they put up 35 or 40 points. You know, the question for the Giants is going to be that offensive line. And, you know, the offensive line's been a problem for 2 years or more now. You know, and Dave Gettleman, you know, who loves the big guys. He loves the offensive linemen, defensive linemen, too. He calls them hog mollies. He calls them hog mollies. And, you know, he's a hilarious guy. And, he's been in the NFL for 35 years. And, you know, he still has his Massachusetts accent, you know, the New England accent, and he loves to talk, but he calls them hog mollies, and you know, he walked in the door with the Giants saying that he needed to rebuild that offensive line. That was the first priority, and he's done that. He's obviously, there are four new starters on that line. There's a Eric Flowers is the only holdover, but he's playing right tackle instead of left. You know, the question is going to be, will that line come together? Is it going to be good enough? Because if it is good enough, if it's at least adequate, if it gives Eli Manning a chance, then this Giants football team, you know, with the weapons they have, they should be able to score a lot of points.
Mm-hmm. Now, like last year with the Jaguars, they selected a running back very high with the fourth overall pick in Leonard Fournette. And, you know, the expectations were high for being such a highly drafted rookie. And it literally changed the entire way Jacksonville was playing. They changed from a zone type of blocking scheme to a power scheme. They really simplified the passing concepts in comparison to years past, to where it took so much pressure off of Blake Bortles, who obviously had struggled in the past, and it made him look so much better than what he actually has proven to be in the past. Obviously, Eli Manning, you know, he's getting a little up there in age. He's not the player he used to be, but we all know that there's still hope left for him to be able to have a couple more productive seasons. The Giants obviously see that. I always see fans saying the same thing. Is that kind of the expectation with Barkley in-house, is that he should be effective enough to add more elements into Eli's game and take that type of pressure off of him?
Well, let me start with this. The Giants are obviously all in on the idea that they believe Eli Manning still has good football left in him. And to be honest with you, from everything I've seen during the spring and the summer, from the practices that I've been able to attend and the games that he's played in so far in the preseason, I see nothing wrong with the way he's throwing the football. You know, he's still got enough juice on it to throw the deep ball. I think the whole idea, you know, that the Giants had was we need to give this man some help. He hasn't had a running game. He hasn't had an offensive line. You know, obviously last year he didn't have any healthy players around him at all. And I believe that what, you know, what they've done here, they've given him, you know, a running back. They have Odell Beckham back. They've given him as much as you can in terms of playmaking weapons. It's just going to come down to whether he does indeed still have the juice on the ball to, you know, to fit the ball into the tight windows and to throw the deeper ball, you know, and whether that offensive line gives him a chance. And if they do, you know, then I think the offense could be fun to watch. But I think that was the plan, was to surround Eli Manning with as much talent as they possibly could.
Now, I have a bit of kind of, I guess the way to put it is, underrated headline that I'm not sure too many Jags fans have focused in on yet. And this can be the last thing we do before we flip it over, let you ask me some stuff about the Jaguars when they have the ball. But if there's one thing that I've noticed in years past, even last year when the Jaguars defense made these huge strides and were near the top of the NFL, they struggle covering tight ends. We mentioned Evan Engram, and he's kind of a unique breed at tight end because he's so athletic. He can play the slot receiver as a big slot guy. He brings those type of dynamic passing elements to the tight end position. How much has he grown heading into his second year in this scheme, and what type of impact are you expecting him to have?
Well, we will see about that. You know, the Evan Engram is a terrific talent. The problem that Evan Engram had last year, the biggest problem that he had last year, was drops. He led the NFL. I think he led all tight ends in drops. I want to say the number was 14. And he had a couple drops in the preseason, and through training camp, he had some drops that were concerning as well. So, you know, that's a thing that's just not going to go away overnight. But he is an absolute, you know, matchup nightmare for opposing linebackers. He has wide receiver speed. You know, he has tight end size, or close to tight end size, because he's a little bit small for a tight end. But basically, he's got wide receiver speed, you know, in a tight end body. He runs routes really well. You know, he's an absolute handful. So, you know, just adding, you know, him, you know, added to Saquon Barkley, who I almost think Barkley's going to give the Giants more as a pass receiver than he might as a running back. And it's funny because, you know, that's the thing that Pat Shurmur talks about more than his running skill, is Barkley's skill as a pass receiver. So, it's exciting to think of Engram and Barkley and Shepard and Odell Beckham and Eli Manning, you know, walking up to the line of scrimmage and going, you know, all right, and looking around and just saying, all right, you know, where's the matchup? You know, who's got the biggest problem here in terms of trying to cover one of these guys? You know, and because you're not going to be able – you can't double team them all.
No.
You can't double team them all. And somebody's going to have a mismatch. You know, and I think that's where – that's where the Giants could have, you know, advantages on offense, is with those weapons, that they're going to be able to create mismatches, and hopefully they get enough blocking that they can take advantage of them.
Definitely. And we'll see just how those mismatch type of players have meshed together as we head into this, as you said, quite a test for them in their week one outing against Jacksonville this week, especially for the young guys. When we bring it back, we'll kind of flip roles here. I'll get a little bit into the Jaguars offense. I'll let Ed kick it off, asking a couple questions just about, you know, what he can expect to see.
All right, Zach. Let's, as you said before the break, we'll kind of turn this around. We'll talk a little bit about the Jaguars, about what the Giants can expect to see, you know, from Jacksonville on Sunday. And I have to start. With this. If we're going to talk about Jacksonville's offense, I have to start with a Blake Bortles question. And obviously, the Jaguars got to the AFC title game, you know, with Bortles last year. They gave him, you know, a pretty healthy chunk of money this offseason. Are you a believer in Blake Bortles, or are you a guy who thinks that you know, to get the big prize, the Jacksonville's going to have to find a different quarterback?
If you asked me this question a year ago, I would have cut you off about halfway and just told you, yeah, I really hope to go after Kirk Cousins this upcoming offseason, that being the offseason that's just passed. Right. At this point, I'm kind of 50-50 on it. I think it's obvious that the easy way around this would have been to upgrade the quarterback position, signing Kirk Cousins, or moving up to select a guy like the Josh Rosens, the Baker Mayfield, well, Baker going one, so that'd have been a little hard. But Josh Rosen sliding, Lamar Jackson falling to 32, he was in Jacksonville's breadbasket there. I think that's the easy solution that could have helped a lot, is finding that new guy that just doesn't have the issues, a guy that you can, you know, start fresh with at the quarterback position while you do have this window that could go for a couple of years. At the same time, and I think I saw this on the Twitter timeline today, I think it might have been from Andy Benoit, who normally I don't really agree with all of his takes too much, but he put one out there today about the magic that the Jags offensive coordinator Nate Hackett has done in kind of hiding Bortles' faults, in building such a strong running game, being able to depend on the run so much that it opens up so much in the passing game. And they run a simple West Coast type of passing concept offense to where they're able to, you know, move the ball around very quickly, take the pressure off of Bortles. And when they've done that, they've moved the ball well enough to win games in the passing game, in the run game. And at this point, that I think if Bortles can continue to build off of that and not keep putting pressure onto his shoulders like he did in years past, I feel like they were close enough last year. They could probably do it again this year, and I think that they could get over the hump.
How much does the injury to Marquise Lee, how much does that change the Jacksonville offense? Obviously, you know, you need to have some weapons, you know, in the passing game. And how much does that hurt the Jaguars?
It hurts in kind of like a vacuum in a way. The way I look at it is that Marquise did lead the team in targets, receptions, and there was one other stat that I'm blanking on right now. It might have been yards, but that's because he meshed so well with these West Coast passing concepts. The short to intermediate quick routes that he was able to gain separation on, and Bortles was just easily able to get him the ball. So, right, just off the bat, it's an injury that does hurt the Jaguars offense. They've also been grooming Dede Westbrook into that type of role over the past year. Very slowly, it's not something that's been overly noticeable in terms of games, but I've really seen at this training camp, you know, there was the perception he'd be a deep threat guy with his 4-4 speed coming out of college, a guy that can take the top off of defenses, but he has truly grown in the same type of mold that Marquise Lee has provided this Jaguars offense in the past. The same type of routes, the slants, the ins, the curls, all the quick routes that Bortles seems to have great chemistry with and is able to work with. And it might start slow, but Dede should be able to step up into the role that Marquise Lee has left void due to his injury, to the point where they might at some point not be even missing a beat and instead actually have a quicker guy out there who might be able to be a little more explosive after getting the ball in his hands.
Zach, let me quickly sort of change gears on you and talk about the Jacksonville defense. I want to ask you, you know, how good this defense is and what, you know, how good you think it can be. But from a Giants perspective, I have to ask you, you know, how can your defensive backs cover anybody when Perry Fuel is your defensive backs coach?
That's a question I was asked a lot when he was hired, and I was very young when he spent his time here in Jacksonville, so I didn't get as much knowledge with him. I think it's been, I'm not sure how great of a job truly he's done with coaching, only because the guys that they've brought in have, you know, really fallen into their laps. Jalen Ramsey falling to the fifth pick was something that people didn't see happening, and he was already a rising star by the time Fuel came in. Boye was fresh off of a, you know, Pro Bowl level season in Houston when they signed him. Tashawn Gibson had flashed ball hawk mentality, and Barry Church was a true veteran leader with the Cowboys. So they pieced together this secondary really well, to the point where it may not have needed that level of coaching to develop these guys. That's where in the future Fuel is going to be very important. Ronnie Harrison was the third round pick this year for the team. They want him to be the strong safety type of the future. They want him to have replace Barry Church and also be able to interchange at free safety, even play some nickel going forward. And that's going to be Fuel's biggest test so far as a coach to see how he develops these guys. At some point, Boye is entering the second year of his contract, but it's something they're able to get out of after the third year. If they're willing to test it, they might need to draft another cornerback at some point earlier on to end up clearing the cap space to pay a guy like Ramsey or Yannick Ngakoue or Miles Jack, in which case they might have to let Boye go and bring in a young guy. That's not now. That's probably in the next 2 years or something like that. And that will be another huge test for Perry. So I still have kind of not hung my hat on whether or not he will get the job done in the future. It will really depend on the development of the young members of the secondary that will be entering this team going forward.
I just had to throw a Perry Fuel thing in there. I mean, Perry was defensive coordinator for the Giants for two or three seasons. I can't remember exactly how many. Part of that was during Tom Coughlin's time as Giants head coach, and he wasn't exactly a beloved defensive coordinator with the Giants. So I just I had to throw in a Perry Fuel mention. You know, not that I mean, Perry Fuel's a good football coach, but his defenses with the Giants weren't all that good. So
right.
So nobody Giants fans weren't sad to see him leave. anyway, Zach, tell me quickly how good you think this defense can be.
I think it can be just as good as last year. Now, entering this offseason, I wasn't as optimistic because, you know, it was hard to set what they did last year as an expectation because it was such a dramatic change compared to years past, and the injury luck was on their side. They had everything going for them. Then they reloaded the defense with Harrison, like I mentioned earlier, like Taven Bryan to fill in an already incredibly deep defensive line. He's going to be a future piece replacing Calais Campbell or Malik Jackson at one of those two positions. It'll just be on whoever they think they need to clear cap space for at some point, and he should be able to fill in. Bringing in DJ Hayden, you know, he's not the greatest corner in the world, but he fills exactly what they needed at the nickel corner position. They've really reloaded the depth. They've got their pieces of the future at the positions that they were going to need to address at some point within the next couple of years. So, you know, considering that in the depth that they've built, I do think that there's the ability for them to be very close to, if not on par with what they did last year. The pass rush and secondary complement each other so well that they can balance on each other. You know, if the pass rush is sending a four-man rush, they can trust the secondary to maintain tight coverage long enough to be able to get that pressure home even on four men. If they're sending blitzers, you know, if they're rushing five plus, then the secondary knows they're about to go make an interception. It's just they're able to balance with each other so well and mesh together so well, and I don't see that, you know, coming to a stop anytime soon with a lot of young guys on this team who continue to grow, like Ngakoue, Ramsey, and Jack, you know, being the leading trio from that 2016 draft class.
I just have one request, you know, to the Jacksonville defense. Guys, please do not break Eli. Don't break Eli, because God knows what I'll have to deal with if Alex Tanny is quarterbacking the Giants. And so please, don't break him.
I can't tell you much about Tanny. I don't know much about him, but I can tell you I was a LaLetta fan when he was coming out. I thought he'd be a really good, like, developmental backup future starter maybe in Jacksonville if they were going to be in the quarterback market. So I'm not saying let's break Eli in any way. I don't want to see that. But at least if that happened, maybe if Tanny ended up not doing the job well, I could see a little bit of my guy and LaLetta out there on the field at some point.
Well, it's interesting that you brought up LaLetta. And, you know, before we call it a show, I'll just talk about LaLetta a little bit. I mean, that was a big story in New York this week. You know, Jerry Reese in 2017 drafted Davis Webb in the third round. Dave Gettleman and Pat Shurmur, you know, chose LaLetta this year in the fourth round. It looked, you know, throughout the spring and the summer, it looked like Davis Webb was going to be the number two quarterback. Although, you know, Pat Shurmur kept telling us, he kept saying there is no depth chart at quarterback. You know, don't read into the fact that Davis Webb's taking second team reps or whatever, which he was. He took almost all the second team reps, you know, and when push came to shove, when they, you know, when they made the roster cuts, they moved on from Davis Webb, which surprised, you know, almost everybody, because none of us really read the clues or understood the clues that Pat Shurmur was leaving for us. And they've chosen, you know, to see what they have in Kyle LaLetta. They like him very much. They like a lot of things that he does. I don't know that he's ready to play right away. I mean, he's a fourth round pick coming out of an FCS school. That's on the roster. So, and we'll see. I think it's an interesting decision that the Giants have made. And either way, you know, if you guys break Eli, the season's done.
Well, I'm hoping that doesn't end up happening. And, you know, if it does, I'm sure everyone will definitely see it come Sunday. Just really, really hoping that doesn't happen. But we are looking forward to Sunday here. I do think that should just about do it for us. Ed, you know, thank you so much for doing this crossover. Everyone can be sure to find it pretty much anywhere you're listening to podcasts. Be sure to throw both Locked On Jaguars and Locked On Giants a subscription.
All right. Hey, thanks, Zach. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun. And hopefully, if the Giants can pull it together like the Jags did in year one of a new culture, we can end up doing this again sometime this year. Maybe a little bit of Tom Coughlin in the Super Bowl against his former Super Bowl champion team.
I don't know if I can handle that.
Oh, that'd be drama. That'd be storyline.
That would be major drama. I'd got to wrap my head around that one.
It'd be quite the show. All right. Well, you guys. Yeah, be sure to throw the subscriptions to Locked On Jaguars and Locked On Giants. You can find all of us on Twitter. Be sure to, you know, keep checking out these shows, these crossover episodes. We'll be bringing them to you every week, and we will catch up with you guys later.